like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Jane Hoffman, president of the Mayor's Alliance of New York City Animals, a collective of some 150 animal shelters and rescue groups with the mission of improving the lives of pets and their humans there. The Alliance is marking its 10th anniversary, so it felt like an ideal time to seek something of a status report on how the Alliance has fared with such primary objectives as significantly boosting animal adoptions in New York City and, not coincidentally, significantly reducing the number of animals killed there, as well as pioneering new programs the Alliance has launched, and more. We'll present that conversation with Jane Hoffman in just a few minutes here on Talking Animals. First, though, let's hear an animal song. This is Brett Denon, Come Back Kid, That's My Dog, on Talking Animals.
Here we go. Oh, yeah. Well, maybe it's the common curse. Maybe things get bad before they get worse. I don't want to become someone who can't live up to what I already done. Don't keep
That's Brett Denon with Comeback Kid, That's my dog, a sprightly animal song to get us started this morning. All right, let's get to our discussion with Jane Hoffman in a conversation recorded last week. Let's welcome Jane Hoffman back to Talking Animals. Let's welcome back to Talking Animals, Jane Hoffman. Thanks so much for joining us again on Talking Animals, Jane.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we first spoke in 2005 when the Mayor's Alliance for New York City's Animals was relatively new, though you were already pursuing a pretty ambitious agenda. Now the Alliance is marking its 10th anniversary, and I'd like to discuss some of the key things that have been accomplished over those 10 years. But before we discuss the present and maybe even the future a little bit, let's touch a bit on the past. On the off chance, some folks listening now didn't somehow hear our conversation 8 years ago, or somehow, even worse, can't remember it. So
hard to believe.
I know. I'm personally offended even hypothetically. So let's hit some basics, starting with, I guess, the most fundamental thing. What exactly is the Mayor's Alliance for New York City's Animals?
Well, the Mayor's Alliance is sort of like the lead agency for an alliance or a coalition of animal rescue groups and shelters in New York City that came together to reduce the euthanasia or killing of healthy or treatable cats and dogs in our animal shelter in New York City, which is called Animal Care and Control of New York City, which is in fact a not-for-profit, but it has a contract with the City of New York to provide animal control services. So that was the agency that we focused our attention on because that's where the animals at risk were. So the Alliance was created to, you know, really pull together all of the groups so that we could be working together to come up with creative solutions to reducing euthanasia and reducing pet overpopulation in New York City.
So take us back, I guess, maybe to 10 years or so ago, and maybe describe a little bit about the scene and the factors that specifically prompted you and others to launch the Alliance. Well, I mean, for example, what was the kill rate or save rate then, and what were the, sort of just the general conditions in the city and beyond that when you decided, hey, let's try this?
Right. Well, a couple of things had sort of happened. Maddie's Fund, which is, you know, of course, the wonderful Duffield family created Maddie's Fund, which is the family foundation in California, was created in 1999. And Rich Avanzino, who had been the president of the SPCA of San Francisco, took over as the president. So that fund was created, which was really to help communities become what they called no-kill communities. So there was that. There was the fact that Mayor Bloomberg, who is soon to be our departed mayor, basically came into office, and we knew that he was very interested in public-private partnerships. I had been one of the founding members of the New York City Bar Association Animal Law Committee, and we had written a memo to the incoming administration and had suggested some things in the animal welfare realm that perhaps his administration would like to take a look at. And the first leadoff issue was animal care and control of New York City. And basically, we sort of laid out there the fact that if we could pull together this community collaboration, we could, if we were fortunate enough, get a very large grant, perhaps from Maddie's Fund, and we could therefore reduce the euthanasia or killing of cats and dogs that were being killed or euthanized in our shelter at that time. And, you know, fortunately, because his incoming administration was, you know, really enthusiastic, as I said, about public-private partnerships, they were very interested in what we had to, you know, offer in the way of at least the beginning of perhaps a solution. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of the birth of it. It was sort of the confluence of those three things happening all roughly at the same time. Maddie's Fund 99, you know, Bloomberg being elected and, you know, coming into the office in 2002, and the New York City Bar being in Animal Law Committee being in a position to write this memo because we had been around since 1990, so we had, you know, some level of standing to, you know, to be able to make these suggestions and have somebody listen to us. So it was all those things came together to be, you know, create this moment. And at that point, well, let's say in 2003, which was really the first full year of the Alliance getting into action, we were killing or euthanizing almost 32,000 cats and dogs a year in New York City.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, it was very, very large, a large number, and nobody was happy about that. But, you know, we were fortunate enough to, form the Mayor's Alliance in 2003, and we did secure a Maddie's Fund grant in 2005, and this, as you mentioned, is our 10th year anniversary, and I'm proud to announce that we are projecting at the end of this year that we will only be euthanizing about 6,200 cats and dogs, down from 32,000. We're not done yet, but you know, we are very proud. I'm proud of the accomplishment of all of the groups, the 150, what we call Alliance Participating Organizations, work that have allowed us to reduce that number so dramatically over the last 10 years.
So, Jane, a couple things then based on that. I mean, obviously that is a dramatic drop. Is there any way to put that? Because so many things in the comparable communities that are pursuing no-kill, et cetera, of course, base it on percentage. So in terms of actual animals, we see a significant drop. But is there any way to put that into some sort of percentages in terms of what the save rate or whatever the, phrase
our live release rate is about 74%.
Okay.
At the beginning of the year, in the first quarter of this year, mm-hmm. we actually at that moment in time, our live release rate it was 84% on a community basis. It's a little bit seasonal here.
Yeah.
Obviously, because we do have winter. But we, we actually pushed it up that high for that period of time. But our, the live release rate is really about 74% at this point in time, as opposed to probably, flip that completely in reverse back in 2003.
Right. So is the 10% difference between 74 and 84 strictly a seasonal factor, or is there some other element too that's in there?
No, I think it was seasonal. It was how many animals are people coming in to adopt? How many people, animals are the groups able to, take transfer of to help get them adopted?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think 74% is probably, where we are right now.
Yeah.
In our progress.
And where, given the path that you've traveled, I mean, where is there another sort of goal for a specific year for 2014, 2015 that you're aiming for in terms of where being at 74% now?
Well, I would love to see us get up to 80% and really hold that percentage, because we have a very difficult environment here. We're a very vertical city. We, in the sense that, we don't have a lot of houses. a lot of people live in apartments.
Sure.
There's a lot of restrictions on pet ownership, unfortunately, in New York City.
Yeah.
We actually, struggle, and we're hoping with the election of the new mayor, Mayor de Blasio, Bill de Blasio, is coming into office next year. We'll be able to make some movement because he's made some fairly, dramatic statements about how he feels about various issues of animal welfare in the city. So, we're hopeful we're going to be able to continue to build on the progress we've already made with this new incoming administration.
And so Sergeant, what are some of those dramatic statements? Because I was going to sort of bring up that, if I'm not mistaken, the name of the organization is slightly a semantic twist, because I've understood this over the years. The mayor office really only is peripherally related to the Mayor's Alliance for New York City.
Right,
Indiana.
Actually,
is that correct?
Yeah, that's completely correct. Yeah. We're a private not-for-profit. We're not a mayor's a mayoral agency. We're not part of the mayor's office. The title and name really came at the very beginning when we were forming, because both the city and the animal welfare side wanted to make it very clear that there was a very strong relationship between with the city government, that the city government was committed to this as well.
Yeah.
Not on any financial basis, because we don't get any city money at all.
Right.
So I sort of think of it more like the President's Council on Physical Fitness, or, you know, the
okay.
Secret Service really defends the office of the president, regardless of who the occupant is. So it's just that the mayor's title, because this was had something that had never been done before, and I really felt that, you know, we needed to really show that we had a close relationship working with the city was what was going to make this possible, because it obviously made other city, you know, not other because we're not a city agencies, but city agencies like the police or the parks or transportation, you know, really realize that we had a very close relationship, so that should not and will not change anything with the Alliance going forward. And, you know, actually, colloquially, we usually say the Alliance, but the mayor, the change in the mayor isn't going to change anything. And actually, I think with Mayor de Blasio coming into office and, you know, some of the statements he's made, I think there's going to be an even, hopefully, you know, more emphasis on, you know, getting the job done here.
Okay, so the dramatic statements you referred to are he's going to further support your efforts rather than anything different philosophically
yes.
or otherwise.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Yes. I think that it's safe to say that, you know, now still Mr. de Blasio, but was elected in large part because of a lot of people who were interested in animal issues in the city.
Yeah, interesting. This is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Jane Hoffman, co-founder and president of the Mayor's Alliance for New York City's Animals. This is a conversation recorded last week. So, okay, so we kind of know where we are, and we kind of even know where we're heading with Mr. de Blasio soon to take his seat. Let's circle back a little bit, Jane, just to sort of the earlier days. So when the Alliance was first created, how many organizations and shelters were part of it, and so therefore kind of under your, like, general purview as the Alliance got?
Well, when we first started there, we called together the sort of five groups. There were, you know, brick-and-mortar shelters, as I call them, in the city, because I knew the city could, you know, understand what they were, because there were, you know, their Department of Health gave permits to these shelters. So it was Animal Haven, it was the ASPCA, it was the Humane Society of New York, it was Bark Shelter. And then we also added one group called City Critters, which was a foster, you know, kennel vet office-based group, because I wanted the city to understand that probably the vast majority of these groups were, in fact, going to be more like City Critters than they were going to be like brick-and-mortar shelters.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew they could understand that. So basically, those organizations are considered the founding members of the Alliance.
Okay.
And today, we have about 150 animal rescue groups and shelters that have joined us.
Wow.
Yeah, and a number of those organizations are purebred rescue groups. So they're groups that are concentrating on one particular breed, particularly the dogs. We have Husky House, which obviously we have Abandoned Angels, which does Cocker Spaniels. We have Miniature Pinscher Rescue, you know, a whole host of groups, because, in fact, you know, as you may know, that somewhere between 20%, around 20% of dogs that go into shelters are, in fact, purebreds.
Yeah.
And if those folks want to concentrate on those, you know, that breed of dog, that's fabulous, and we welcome their help.
Sure. Absolutely, especially when you find so often people who are interested in having a dog join their family, but for one reason or another have a very specific dog in mind, and then say, oh, well, so therefore I'm going to buy or get from a breeder because I couldn't possibly adopt. And, you know, now there's more and more ways for them to turn and see that
right.
That's not the
I
case
mean,
at all. Yeah.
Yeah, obviously we advocate, you know, adopt, don't buy.
Sure.
You know, make adoption your first option.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're absolutely right. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, wanting to have a particular breed or type of dog, you know.
Sure.
But we just hope that people do not ever go to a pet store and buy a puppy. You know, if you want a particular dog and you go to a responsible breeder, the dogs live at home, they know who they are, they're very responsible, they want their, puppies spayed or neutered. I don't have any problem, with people who want a particular breed, but just please do not go to those pet stores because they all come from puppy mills.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole another show or set of shows that we've done. But one thing in terms of not even necessarily the five sort of co-founding groups, but now that you say that there's 150 some odd that are part of the alliance, I mean, one thing I probably didn't fully understand all the nuances of when we spoke 8 years ago that I now do all too well is how tricky it is to get a handful of organizations or shelters to see eye to eye on policy or leadership, much less 150. So how did things go in that regard in the earliest days, especially when you're going beyond just those first, founding five groups, and more were being added, where I have to think, just based on other shows and interviews and things that I've done or dealt with, there's turf battles, there's conflicting views about adoptions, there's conflicting views about no-kill, there's conflicting views about feral cats. So maybe you could talk a little bit about how you and the rest of the alliance sort of navigated through that sort of a territory.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that Maddie's Fund required, which at the time I was, really unhappy about having to do, but I have blessed them every single day since we did it, was they required that we put together a 10-year strategic plan. Putting together a strategic plan is not rocket science, actually. I think a lot of people get very, worried when they hear strategic plan.
Yeah.
Basically, our strategic plan was just deciding, what we wanted to do and how we were going to get there and what resources we needed, what resources we had to accomplish that. And we basically came up with four core objectives, which were increase adoptions. And by that, we meant just look at what barriers there were to adoptions in our city. Mm-hmm. And it was basically getting people to go to shelters was very difficult. Traveling in New York City can be very difficult.
Just the transportation itself, right?
Exactly, exactly. So it was, providing innovative spaces to show our, wonderful shelter animals and rescue animals in, so they could get adopted. Our second one was decrease homelessness, which actually for us included spay-neuter of the owned and feral community, but also responsible pet ownership issues, licensing, microchipping, all those issues.
Mm-hmm.
Increasing awareness, which was about the shelter animals themselves, but also about the shelters and rescue groups throughout the city, which a lot of people knew nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
And fourth was to strengthen the resources of these groups to increase their capacity and their capability to do what they were already doing, but doing it much better.
Mm-hmm.
And that included giving what we called capacity building grants. That included training sessions like how to be a 501c3, how to do social media, how to do fundraising, but then also infection control in your foster homes or shelters, things like
mm-hmm.
that. And then we created initiatives that would support those goals and or help us reach those objectives. One of the most important ones, looking at it, was, as I mentioned before, transportation and getting around. So we created a program called the Wheels of Hope transport program, which is now six customized vans that transport animals from animal care and control to the rescue groups or shelters that are pulling them, who are what are called New Hope Partners of ACC. That means they are rescue groups and shelters that are partners with them, pull animals to help get them adopted, bringing them to them. Because, as I mentioned earlier, 90% of these groups are foster-based, they're volunteer,
mm-hmm.
Like city critters, and they work full-time jobs.
Yeah.
So, that would hold everything up if you had to wait from weekend to weekend, perhaps, to be getting animals out of the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Because essentially, The Alliance is a very large marketing and distribution network, actually, and it's marketing the animals at ACC to the groups to help get them to a wider market area, if you will, and then the Wheels of Hope is the distributing them out. So we actually had a very clear goal of what we wanted to achieve, which was we wanted to reduce, you know, not kill any healthy or treatable animals at Animal Care and Control.
Yeah.
So the idea is, okay, now we need to create an infrastructure to make that happen, which is really boring. It's not, you know, this is the kind of stuff that's not sexy, it's not warm and fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
It's putting together email lists and giving it to the New Hope Department at Animal Care and Control, which is the marketing department, giving them the list of email addresses of these rescue partners, because back then, you know, we were all just starting, so that they could reach, they would have the means to reach out to them, to ask them for help. Creating, you know, a series of meetings and adoption events so that people could see each other.
Yeah.
You know, at the very beginning, we had a very large adoption event, in Central Park. And we gave little grants to people to all buy green market tents, which are white pop-up tents. They're 10 by 10.
Mm-hmm.
And to get a banner and to get T-shirts. And there was a number of reasons for, you know, so that they could market themselves to
sure.
the public. So there was beginning, it was sort of the
outreach.
Yes, strength and resources, though.
Yeah.
Teach these people how to market themselves.
Yeah.
You need a website. You need, you know,
right.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And how to present your animals and increase awareness, because we were in the center of Central Park, which is the jewel in the crown of New York City Parks Department. Thousands of people must go through Central Park every weekend. And, you know, so people were becoming aware, and I would hear people say, "Oh, my God, I didn't know Bobby and the Strays was in Queens. They're right in my neighborhood." Or, "Look at these fabulous shelter animals."
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it also helped with increasing adoptions, because these animals were out in a wonderful, friendly, beautiful setting, you know, being shown that they were available for adoption.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just the whole decreased homelessness, we got a whole opportunity to educate the public, because we would have asked the trainer, asked the vet, asked the you know, groomer questions about animals, so that they could see that these animals all deserve this level of service. So it was creating, you know, venues like that, where also, frankly, to go back to my very long answer to your short question, was to show each group that other group does not have, you know, horns and a tail and, you know,
right.
cloven hoofs, that they were people just trying to do the same thing you were doing. So, you know, it was not being preachy and you all must love each other. It was just, okay, this is how you're working together, this is how you're communicating together, and this is what we can achieve together doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, it sounds, as you describe it this way, especially that almost so as Maddie's Fund kind of required you to present a 10-year strategic plan, as part of that, then, the sort of filtered down where then all the groups and shelters that were participating were sort of required, or at least guided, on how to, you know, sort of bring more of a business sort of sense, whether it's budgeting, marketing, other, you know, basic things, websites, whatever, so that ultimately, you know, more animals are better served.
Exactly. It's the, you know, teach a person to fish or, you know, give them the fish, and we chose to teach them how to fish, because this has also got to be sustainable. That was something that was very important for everybody to realize, that, you know, Maddie's Fund and their generosity were giving us this very large grant, which we were then passing on to the groups in the form of adoption subsidies, which meant that, you know, we had a baseline year in 2003. If you adopted out 10 animals, you know, that was your baseline. In 2005, when we began to distribute the grant, it, you know, you needed to adopt more than 10 animals. So if you adopted 12 animals, you got 2 adoption subsidies when you adopted that animal into a home. So there was also a whole structure of reporting coming back from the groups to us saying, well, I took, you know, these animals from the Animal Care and Control. I took this from the public. I took these from another group, and I adopted out these, and sadly, this one had to be euthanized because they got very ill, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But what it began to teach the groups to do is they needed to keep control or know what their, for lack of a better word, inventory was. Mm-hmm. How many cats and dogs are you taking in? Where are you getting them from? Are they getting adopted? How's that working for you? And, you know, depending on how many animals they adopted into homes, they would get a subsidy. So, you know, we were trying to train them to, okay, there's all this money, but you really should be setting some of it aside to build up a reserve for yourself at the time when the grant ends in 7 years, which it did, as all grants do, unfortunately.
Right.
But it was, you know, it was everything was professionalizing the industry or the community, whatever term you want to use, but it's exactly what you said. Teach them how to do it so they can continue on, you know, forever, getting, you know, bigger, better, faster.
Right, and it even sounds like the way that they were reporting those statistics and trying to, you know, hit certain targets the next year, that then there were sort of incentives which further, you know, seems directly taken from sort of the business world. And it sounds like also there was enough time before the grant was going to run out, that you know, that it was reasonable to sort of impose these sorts of things. It wasn't like, hey, you know, we got to quickly shift things around in a year and a half or else. So nonetheless, was there along the way, though, as there again tends to be, at least in the situation I've been aware of, you know, still some sort of philosophical sort of either pushback or just difference about how to implement some of these things about reducing the killing, and even, you know, within that, say, how feral cats were handled, et cetera?
Well, you know, we've always been strong proponents of trap, neuter, return, and actually we had quite a victory in 2011 when, as part of a bill that was passed about increasing funding for animal care and control, we got basically TNR endorsed as the policy of the city. And, you know, the full implementation of that, you know, will be worked out. And,
sure,
you know, I'm very hopeful going forward, as I said, into this new administration. What that meant, I mean, basically the private sector, you know, our groups, and the TNR, the individuals who do TNR, you know, have been doing all the work. But just the fact that now it's the policy of the city has helped enormously. You know, one of our initiatives is called the Feral Cat Initiative, and that, in the same way, tried to build an infrastructure for the groups and the folks doing TNR to have support. And that was made up of, you know, having trap banks, because we have very small apartments in New York, many of us, and you can't keep, you know, have a heart traps in your, you know, your bathroom and never expect to take a shower again.
Right.
So we have trap banks. We use the Wheels of Hope transport program to take traps to folks, to bring them back to the trap bank, to take cats in traps to the spay-neuter provided by the Humane Society of New York or the ASPCA. We have this fabulous party every year called the Fall Feral Feline Fiesta to just celebrate. You know, it's really just a party. And that's when we unveil the timeline of the evolution of TNR in New York City
in
a slideshow.
And you also celebrate alliteration, it sounds like, in that
party
as
yes, we do.
Okay, so this is Talking Animals. My guest is Jane Hoffman, who leads the Mayor's Alliance for New York City Animals. It's marking its 10-year anniversary. This conversation was recorded last week. You have just maybe a couple more minutes, Jane. So it sounds like on the TNR thing, once that was adopted kind of as an official policy of the city, you know, if people felt differently about it, hey, well, this is how it's going to work.
I think most of the people in, I mean, it's the only effective and humane way to deal with this. I mean, that's just at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, there are other things that, you know, are issues, like we do not want feral cats where there's endangered species. We have piping plovers, you know, out in Gateway. So, you know, there's no absolute one answer to anything, but
right,
when you look at the numbers and you look at just, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. If you catch and kill, there was a reason the cats were there in the first place. So you're going to get more cats because there's irresponsible humans or there's unfortunate, you know, accidents of pets getting lost.
And they'll fill that void, basically.
Yeah. From the feral, I mean, from the animal welfare community, there was never any pushback on TNR at all. In New York, I think we all want cats to be inside. I mean, none of us think cats should be outside in an urban environment like New York City. But they're there, so we have to deal with it. But, you know, just to jump back for a minute, I think, you know, we were very fortunate in getting Maddie's Fund and also having, you know, the support of the ASPCA here in New York because we had so many services and resources and good things to offer to people because that's what how I see my our role, the Alliance role, is really just offering services, resources, you know, to this community. And all you had to do to partake of this cornucopia of, frankly, you know, financial incentives and being able to participate in events and getting all these other services like the Wheels of Hope is to buy into the mission, which was to reduce euthanasia. Now, that doesn't mean some people, you know, there aren't little, especially, you know, social media, it's a really double-edged sword, the Internet.
Yeah, for sure.
We couldn't do what we do without it. But on the other hand, you know, sometimes I want to say to people, ma'am, take your hands off the keyboard, step back, nobody will get hurt.
Take a breath, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's that, a little bit of that, but I think the overwhelming momentum of all of these groups working together to pull animals from animal care and control, you know, really has overcome any of the smaller individual spats that might be going on.
Sure.
And also we're in a position to be able to negotiate a lot of that. I think a lot of communities don't have that luxury where there is sort of one agency whose sole purpose is to make all of these groups successful.
Yeah, no, that it is sort of a singular situation where there is kind of you as the Alliance as the umbrella group that, you know, can sort of, you know, lasso sort of people into some semblance of order when the greater good really, in terms of the animals, is clearly going to be served.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I've done webinars and I've done, you know, gone to conferences and spoken about this and, you know, just talking about, look, collaboration is what saves animal lives. Just identify what's the barriers to your collaborating and, you know, try to work your way through these. I'm not saying it's easy, but that is what will save lives. And once you've decided on that, just get a plan together.
Sure.
You know, about just make it very, you know, very precise. It doesn't make it as narrow as possible in some ways, and just focus on doing that because there's so many things that everybody agrees on, like increasing spay-neuter, reducing euthanasia, you know, probably dog licensing and microchipping so we get pets returned to their owners. We don't, you know, pets that already have homes, we want to get them back to them. You know, look for the commonalities, not for the differences. And again, you know, we had a pretty big stick to really get everybody in line.
Well, and speaking of that, we have just maybe another moment or two, Jane. I'm going to try to cram about 15 minutes worth of stuff into those 2 minutes. But anyway, so one of those is how much money has Maddie's Fund poured into the Alliance over the years?
I think if you look at the total over the years between spay-neuter and adoption subsidies, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million.
Yeah. And what is Maddie's Fund involvement with the Alliance at this point?
Well, this past year we were privileged to be able to participate in the Maddie's Pet Adoption Days, which took place in June. They supported several of these events, which are adoption waived, fee waived. And we participated in that, and at that, as part of that event, we adopted out about 3,000 cats and dogs.
Wow!
It was very exciting, and they helped us out to be able to allow the groups to waive their adoption fees for any adoptions done in conjunction with that event.
But otherwise, apart from this thing, is the Maddie's Fund, the overall grant that sort of helped you really launch and develop at least the Alliance.
That ended in 2011.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So then it's kind of more one-offs, I guess, with Maddie's Fund.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
And we hope to, you know, if they're going to do it again next year, we certainly hope they allow us to participate. But you know, the Maddie's Fund allowed us to take off and to build all this.
Sure.
And we have been able to sustain it, which is what's very exciting for me over the last last
which,
2 years.
Which, again, proves that even though you were sort of resistant at first, their demand for the 10-year strategic plan was probably very wise. But So here we are kind of rounding the bend then towards the end of, there's a friend of Maddie's fun, I'm sure, but towards the end of 2013 and marking the alliance's 10th anniversary. So if you had to sort of offer a report on, you know, the current status of the Mayor's Alliance, what are like three or four of the most important things you would cite? Like, what are either best things overall or proudest recent accomplishments now that we are at the 10-year mark?
I think the proudest is, what I kind of look at it, what is the key initiatives we're really running in? And one is the Wheels of Hope, where we transported about 16,000 animals this year.
Wow.
To their second chances from Animal Care and Control, and two adoption events, and two spay-neuter and feral cats. So it's just the fact that, you know, that idea has really, you know, blossomed into one of our most important and, I think, biggest achievements, because that's what really has saved animal lives. Again, building the infrastructure to increase, trap-neuter return in the city, in conjunction with the wonderful free or the low-cost spay-neuter provided by the ASPCA and the Humane Society of New York and Toby Project. So it's really and the major mega adoption events that we have been able to put together, like Adopt-a-Palooza and Whiskers in Wonderland, which is coming up in early December, to allow the groups to come together to showcase themselves and their animals and, you know, really, you know, drive adoptions through the roof, basically.
Sure. Well, one other thing I might want to add that I came across when I was sort of preparing to speak with you, Jane, that maybe isn't as sort of high profile as some of those things, but maybe you could just speak briefly, and then this will probably take us to the end here, about this kind of new, I guess it's a relatively new program where there's a domestic violence shelter that allows victims to bring their pets. I just love
that
idea.
Yes, it's, yeah. We have a pilot program with the Urban Resource Institute, which is one of the largest providers of domestic violence sheltering in the city. And in June, they announced that they were going to start to allow victims of domestic violence to come into one of their shelters with their pets. And they originally were doing it with small pets, cats, birds, pocket pets, if you will.
Yeah.
There's a gerbil there now. And they're opening it up to dogs at the beginning of next year. So this is extremely exciting. We created this Helping Pets and People in Crisis program of ours because we realized that these were animals that had homes. They didn't need to lose them. We really needed to work with the social service agencies, which we've been doing for about the last 10 years. So it really came to fruition when this wonderful agency, Urban Resource Institute, stepped up to the plate and said, you know what? We want to protect the whole family. We want to shelter the whole family, and that includes the pets as well.
So significant, because anybody, you don't have to know much about that kind of situation to know that so many people don't leave the home where there is the violence because they can't bring their animals, so they stay. And,
exactly.
There's no option for them. And anyway, so this, I just thought that was so
thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, it's very, very exciting, and we're hoping we can really, you know, build on that, expand out, and get other agencies, including the city shelters, to start to think about the whole family. Because we did it already when Superstorm Sandy hit us.
Yeah.
We had, they were allowed to bring pets into some of the emergency evacuation shelters. So we can do it.
Yeah.
And we're New York. We can do anything.
Absolutely.
We need to do this.
All right. Well, this is so great. We've been speaking with Jane Hoffman from the Mayor's Alliance for New York City Animals. Again, the website is animalalliancenyc.org. And there's also a Facebook page under Mayor's Alliance NYC. So, Jane, thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. Congratulations on your great work. And here's to another 10 years.
Great. Thanks so much, Duncan. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you so much.
This is Talking Animals. Let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Brian Regan with a piece called Spiderweb and Bees on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
You know the ultimate in looking like an idiot? It's when you walk into a spider web, right? Because nobody else sees that spider web. They just see you walking off in the distance, suddenly flipping out for no reason whatsoever. You're just walking along, everything's fine. All of a sudden, no! Hey, did you see that guy? He just snapped. He was walking along and just went nuts through that tree. Look, he's still doing it. I don't know what happened to him. It's the same thing when a little bee starts chasing you around. Nobody sees the bee, they just see you, you know, just trying to brush them. Oh. People off in the distance. Hey, is that guy waving to us? Hey, how you doing? No! Ah!
All right, that was Brian Regan with a piece called Spiderweb and Bees, taken from his album simply entitled Live. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. We're going to be playing Name That Animal Tune a bit later. The winner will receive a copy of John Homan's book, What's a Dog For? We'll get to that in a few moments here on Talk Animals. But I think we'd like to first hear another animal tune. And this goes back from the Talking Animals Festival and the CD we made there a few years back. So this is our friend Loris Vidal doing Queen Bee on Talking Animals.
She's my queen bee. Oh, oh, oh. She loves me to my soul. Oh, she rocked me to my soul. My baby, baby, baby. She loves me to my soul. Oh, she locked me to my soul. Well, baby, won't you come by me? I hold you like greed. Baby, won't you come by me? I know you'll agree, 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 agree. Oh, you love me to my soul. Oh, you love me to my soul. Oh, she rock me to my soul. Mm-hmm, to my soul. Well, she's a strutter, she can shake his son. She'll dance and she'll have her fun. She's a shot she can shake his son. Oh, she'll dance and having fun. My baby, 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 she love me to my soul. Oh, she rock me to my soul. She love me to my soul. To my soul. Songs were made for lovers. Lovers and lovers and lovers and lovers and love. Lovers and lovers and lovers and lovers and love. Lovers and lovers and lovers and lovers and love. Lovers and lovers and lovers. Sweeter than a honeybee. Oh, my baby been sweet on me. Sweeter than a honeybee. Oh, she's my queen bee. Oh, she rocked me to my soul. To my soul, she rocked me to my soul, oh, to my soul.
Yeah, how about them apples?
Thanks a lot.
You bet. Thank you, Loris. That's Loris Vidal doing a version of Queen Bee from the Talking Animals CD. of course, recorded at the Talking Animals, second Talking Animals Festival some years back. I'm Duncan Strauss, and we're sort of in the home stretch of this edition of Talking Animals. We're going to hit some news and announcements, and we still have Name That Animal Tune coming up. On the news and announcements front, one thing I found interesting is, you might remember back in May, we spoke with Dr. Barbara Natterson Horowitz and Catherine Bowers, authors, notable book called Zubiquity that looked at, among other things, how veterinary medicine and some of the findings there can help healing medicine and vice versa. So comes now this new information from Medical Express. It says, understanding ourselves by studying the animal kingdom is the headline. Research released recently reveals a new model for a genetic eye disease and shows how animal models from fruit flies to armadillos and monkeys can yield valuable information about the human brain. The findings were presented at Neuroscience 2013, the annual meeting of the Society for Neuroscience and the world's largest source of emerging news about brain science and health. Animal models have long been central in how we understand the human brain, behavior, and nervous system due to similarities in many brain areas and functions across species. Almost every major medical advance in the last century was made possible by carefully regulated, humane animal research. Today's findings build on this rich history and demonstrate what animals can teach us about ourselves. Some of these findings show that the nine-banded armadillo may serve as a model for certain types of progressive blindness. The animal's poor eyesight mimics many human disorders and may shed light on new treatment approaches for such diseases. Also, analysis of a baboon population reveals particular genes that may be involved in creating the quote-unquote folds in the structure of the brain. These findings provide information on how human genes may have evolved to create the brain's shape and function. And also, monkeys and humans use similar brain pathways while processing decisions. Detailed analyses of similarities and differences in brain wiring could provide new insights into decision-making in humans. We spoke last week about black dog syndrome, which I think also, of course, extends to cats. It's basically sort of a phenomenon, if that's the right word, that animal shelters have known for many, many years, which is that black-coated pets end up waiting longer to get adopted. So black cats, black dogs often are the last ones to get adopted if they do. So organizations nationally try to offset that. And we're in the midst of that now, or the Back in Black adoption event nationally by Best Friends and others. And locally that's being done by Humane Society of Tampa Bay and perhaps others. Go to humanesocietytampabay.org. And find out. Usually there's all kinds of cool rates and incentives. Also, mark your calendars. Thanksgiving is probably already marked, but this is to let you know again about Thanks Vegan. And they expect over 300 vegans, vegetarians, friends and families for others at the Tampa Bay's 8th annual Thanks Vegan Feast. So it'll be a potluck meal and fun and all kinds of stuff that's taking place Thanksgiving Day, obviously, from 1:30 to 5:30. PM at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tampa, 11,400 Morris Bridge Road and I-75 in Temple Terrace. So you can go to the website thanksvegan.com or find it on Facebook by the same name, Thanks Vegan, to find out either what you can bring, or if you're not able or inclined to bring something, then what sort of price you would expect to pay. If you know this tune, this is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WMNF member, and we will set you up with a cool book from the Talking Animals Animal Library. For the first person who emails, instead of calling this time, please email the correct title of this animal tune to Duncan@WMNF.org. And the first person who does so, correctly, of course, at that email address will win a cool prize. All right, so we have reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. TalkingAnimals.net one more time. We're going to close things out here, of course, with a animal tune, as is our want. This is Split Lip Rayfield with Blue Tick Hound on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.